Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Christina De La Rosa about the upcoming Longest Day concert. The Catalyst Quartet will offer a preview of their performances at the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. And Colette Costa will give us an update of activities at the Goldtown Theater. And we'll speak with Juno School District Elementary Art Specialist Nancy Lanehart about the upcoming art show. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native woman from Canada's West Coast recently received international recognition for her grassroots environmental activism. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, Marilyn Baptiste led a fight against a proposed open-pit copper and gold mine in British Columbia.
45-year-old Marilyn Baptiste received $175,000 during a ceremony at the San Francisco Opera House. She was joined by five other recipients from Kenya, Myanmar, Scotland, Haiti, and Honduras. Baptiste is a former chief of the Zeniquatin First Nations in British Columbia. When she was first told about the prize, she wanted to say she didn't want it. But then she thought about the work still ahead and realized the award could help gain more allies and more public international education. Baptiste prepared environmental, cultural, and economic data at environmental hearings against Taseko Mines. She also began a one-woman blockade in 2011 that prevented construction crews from getting to the proposed mine site.
You know, the land and the area itself is very sacred, is very powerful, and a source of our spirituality. For the Tlaquitin people, our wild fish stocks, the clean, unpolluted waters, the land is our lifeblood. We are connected to the land. The land is connected to us. You cannot put a value on that.
The British Columbia Supreme Court denied Taseko's request to end the blockade. And last year, the Supreme Court of Canada granted the Tsilhqot'in Nation title to more than 650 square miles of land in the region where Baptiste lives. It was the first time in Canadian history a court granted such title. Baptiste says she will use the prize money to help her family and her community. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The National Park Service has released plans to establish a permit system for tribes that want to gather plants for traditional purposes. As Carrie Young reports, the proposal was recently published in the Federal Register.
In the past, agency rules have prevented tribal members from taking plants like willow shoots and mesquite from Park Service land, with the exception of a few informal agreements. The new proposal would change that. Members of federally recognized tribes who want to apply for a permit would have to list the plants they want to gather, explain their traditional purposes, and describe how they'll be removed. Robert McDonald, a spokesman for the Hualapai tribe in northern Arizona, says the plan has been well received by tribal members, but adds some have concerns about how to protect certain cultural practices from being shared as a public record.
You always have to balance the need for public documentation with the sensitivities of the cultural practices that we're talking about.
Park Service officials maintain that sensitive information could be kept confidential. The proposal is open to public comment until July 20th. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
New leaders of the Navajo Nation will be sworn in next week. President-elect Russell Begay and Vice President-elect Jonathan Nez are scheduled to take oath of office during a ceremony in Fort Defiance, Arizona. Begay and Nez were voted into office after a special election last month. Newly elected members of the Navajo Board of Election Supervisors will also take the oath of office at the event. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon signed a bill Friday authorizing federally recognized tribes the ability to sponsor charter schools. The bill was an effort by tribal leaders and Indian educators. Eddie Hamilton, governor of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribe, says having a charter school on tribal lands will provide an option that was never afforded to tribes before. Indian educators say it's a shift in contemporary public education for Indian students to enhance their formal schooling. The bill takes effect in November. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The Juneau Planned Parenthood Health Center offers birth control options, well woman exams, and STD testing and treatment in a welcoming, non-judgmental environment, and is open on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Schedule an appointment online at ppgnw.org or call 1-800-769-0045. Planned Parenthood. Care no matter what.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by Christina De La Rosa. She is coordinating the Longest Day concert coming up on Solstice, June 21st. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, so the Longest Day concert. Tell us a little bit about how you're inspired to organize this.
Well, my mother, Elizabeth, has Alzheimer's, about mid-stage, and I was on the email list for the National Alzheimer's Association, and they sent me notice about their national event. They're doing it on Solstice, and the Longest Day is kind of a pun about when you look after someone with Alzheimer's, sometimes it can feel like a really long day. And so I thought, well, I've gone to a lot of events, and I've been helping organize planetarium events for 3 or 4 years. So I thought, what the heck? I can do it. And basically, you can do any kind of fundraising that you want. So I picked a concert for two reasons. One, because we have so many talented musicians in Juneau, not including me. And the other reason is because music is something that people with Alzheimer's, even quite severe Alzheimer's, can be get a lot of pleasure from. And if you ever saw that movie, Alive Inside, that was all about that. The director, his mission is to bring music into nursing homes just on iPods, such a simple, cheap thing that can bring so much joy to people who are really disconnected from life with Alzheimer's.
And you're telling me your mother has been to Alaska some 5 times?
Yes, she came. My relatives only come when I buy them tickets, but she came up here. She went kayaking. She went hiking. We had a lot of fun. She was always very active, and she was working till she was about 70. And then when she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she lost her driving license. And then probably took another year before my brother and I really realized that. And then she went into assisted living for a few months, and then she went to a nursing home where she's been for 2 years in California.
Okay. And you're saying that music is a good form of therapy for people with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I think because music, and I've read that music is something people can enjoy while they're dying. For example, my father-in-law didn't really listen to classical music, but I believe my husband played him some Bach, which is quite spiritual music, when he was dying. I think it's one of the last senses to go. And for people with Alzheimer's, it can connect. Sometimes people's distant memories can be triggered by the music, let's say whatever music you grew up with. And just something that people can just enjoy. If they're more active, they could dance to it, or they could just listen to it. They might sing along to it. And when I was with my mother, there was a really cool thing on the Kindle where you played the song on the Kindle. It actually showed you the lyrics with the words highlighted as you went along, my mother is still able to read, so that really engaged her, just reading those words and listening to songs like James Taylor and John Denver, for example. And she also enjoys church music, so.
Okay. you don't need to answer this if it's too personal, but thinking about folks who are listening right now who haven't had to deal with somebody who's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, what would be some of your advice? What's the process been like for you?
Well, I have a whole list of things they could do. First of all, I would just say that if you find out someone you know has Alzheimer's, is that the question?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, even though it's a terminal illness, the person will die of Alzheimer's if some other disease doesn't get them ahead of time. And even though it's terminal and there's no cure and it's an awful disease, there's still a lot you can do to help the person have a good quality of life. And there's still a lot you can do to help yourself have a meaningful relationship with them. But there's going to be some really, really hard things and some really good moments of connection, too. And there's a lot of things you can do. I could go into them, but...
Please do, a couple.
You could, even before your parents get sick, start thinking about if you can find out all their financial information, get their health insurance information, get on their list so the doctor can be allowed to give you their medical records, get power of attorney for health care, get a joint bank account, get a diagnosis. If they get Social Security, once they have Alzheimer's, you could become the representative payee, which means you can control their Social Security funds. But it's hard to have those conversations before something has even happened, but those are just some of the things that you can do.
Okay. And this, the Longest Day concert, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not so much of a fundraiser as it is just to raise awareness?
It's both. It's for the Alzheimer's Association, so all the money beyond the small expenses will go to them, and that is the National Association, not the Alaska Association. But we also want to raise awareness because I think a lot of people like myself who are well-educated, well-informed, listen to the radio, et cetera, still it might come to them a shock when they realize a friend or a loved one or themselves has Alzheimer's. I don't think there's been as much information out there as there could have been. So I'm going to have education tables. I'm recruiting different organizations to have someone people can talk to, and I'll have some literature people can have.
I think just those few highlights you gave us a moment ago were very informative. So this is going to be, again, on Solstice at the Jack. It was going to be at Marine Park, but it's now going to be at the Jack from 1 to 7 p.m. Sounds like you could also use some volunteers.
Yeah, I'm recruiting for volunteers. My main need right now is for musicians. That's the fun job. You get to do a 45-minute set, and in between sets, I'll be talking about Alzheimer's, maybe sharing some poems or stories. If you have a poem or story, you can give them to me to read or read them yourself. I'm looking for people I'm going to have these little purple bags with little gifts in it that people can donate as like gift bags for caregivers. They're like lunch bags. I want to have people collecting money on the little website that goes directly to Alzheimer's Association. I want to have someone do decorations, and I need anyone who knows anything about contacting the cruise ships about publicity. And the best way to find out about the volunteers is basically volunteer jobs is to sign up, and I can tell you about that, too, in a moment.
Okay. again, so that's the Longest Day concert at the Jack, June 21st, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Need volunteers, need musicians. What is the best contact number for you, Christina?
The best thing is just to email me at astronomyhumor@gmail.com, and that's just one word, astronomyhumor. Or you can just call me or text me at 500-2942, and I'll just send you the link for something that's called Sign Up Genius. And it's just a program where you can just sign up for specific slots for volunteering. Also, you can also, on that link, you can also donate to our team. Our team is called the Juno Forget-Me-Nots. Or you can also become a member of the team, which it costs $20. You get a T-shirt. And at that time, you can also, if you want to, try to recruit donations yourself through your friends using the social media tools the Alzheimer's Association provides.
Okay, Christina. Switching hats for a second. You wear another hat over at the Planetarium. I understand you have a show coming up.
Yes. I'm going to do a show a week from Tuesday at 7:30 called Earth Day Humor. Because Earth, when you start thinking about the environment, it can be a little grim. But this is purely a little bit of education, but basically humor about Earth Day that I put together. That's a free show at 7:30, suitable for all ages. And then on the end of the month, the last Tuesday of the month, at 6:30, will be Bad Astronomy. John Kramer's, another volunteer at the Planetarium, will talk about some of the myths, misconceptions people have about astronomy. And as always, those shows are free at the Planetarium. And the webpage for the Planetarium is mariedrakeplanetarium.org.
Okay. Christina De La Rosa, thank you for coming in today and talking about the Longest Day concert. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just give me a call. I'll send you the link, and then you can read more about it, see how you might want to get involved. If you can't volunteer or donate, that's fine. Just show up for the event. Wear purple. Enjoy the music. Make a small or large donation and learn a little bit and be informed, because if you don't have a family member or friend who has Alzheimer's now, I guarantee you will soon. Because I look around Juneau and I see a lot of faces like myself. I'm 55, and if it hasn't got you yet, it's going to get you soon. So you might as well be informed and make the best of the situation that you can.
Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And here is a tune in honor of Cinco de Mayo.
Daba ventaja a su madre, muy pronto dejó a su padre, con dos cuerpos le ganó. Era de pelo retinto, dos albo y con un lucero, muy fachoso y mitotero. Y en el potrero quedó. Qué lástima que muriera mi compañero mejor. Por eso cuando el sol muere y la luna va a salir, me voy a sobre el potrero.
Support for this station comes from Alaska Canopy Tours, offering canopy and zipline tours. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton, and I have been joined now in the studio by the Catalyst Quartet. Welcome, Catalyst Quartet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
So nice to have you all here in Juno. So we have Carla, Jesse, Paul, and Carlos. They've been playing in earnest already all across Juno. Jet lag still haunting you, worn off?
Not too bad, no. I mean, it's nice because you wake up really early, which is great.
And we've had this great weather, so you can enjoy beautiful Juno mornings. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit how the four of you came together, how you met, how this formed?
Well, we've known each other in different, through different things over the years, like music festivals and going to similar schools and programs. But we all participated in a competition called the Sphinx Competition, which is now a larger organization. We all won various prizes over the years, and that competition turned into a large organization and has a lot of educational endeavors and things, and they wanted to foster a young string quartet, and so they wanted to put together something that represented their organization, so they put us together.
And
that's how that happened.
How many years ago was that?
That was 5 years ago.
Okay, year five for the quartet. Mm-hmm. How's it going?
It's going well.
Having fun?
It's a good year, and as is our album is coming out this year, so it's really super exciting year.
Yeah, tell us about that. So in my hands I have right here the Bach Gould Project. What year is this one released?
Just last April.
Okay. And you have another one coming out? Is that right?
There will be a CD which we're featured on that will come out in October, so in the fall. And then there will be another one in the pipeline shortly thereafter.
Okay. So professional musicians, you just tour around and play music, what you love, all year. That's your life. Is that
it? It's really rough.
I bet. I bet there are some challenges, though. You know, for example, I saw you play at the Shrine, and it looked like you were all blissed out and just loving it. It was this beautiful, venue, great acoustics, and, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why you do what you do. But traveling all the time can't always be easy, right?
It's very hard dealing with time zones and different hotels and, you know, getting on a plane and transferring with luggage and having to get off the plane and go directly to a rehearsal like we did when we arrived here after traveling for over 12 hours. It's stuff like that is very rough.
Radio interviews.
Yeah. It can be the easy part because we don't have to play, really.
Okay. Let's see. You will be doing a workshop tonight out at UAS. I'm sure you've done a few of these in the past. What do your workshops look like? What can our listeners who are planning on attending expect tonight? And who should attend? Who would benefit from this?
Anyone that likes music and likes to learn about how music is made, the craftsmanship that goes behind what we do, and sort of what we're all about. Because I think that one of the great things about a workshop like that, unlike going to a concert that we may play, is that you get to really go behind the scenes and explore our ethos sort of through instruction. And I'd say that potentially there'll be people playing for us and we'll be coaching them. There'll inevitably be a question and answer session where they'll be able to dig more deeply into who we are. And we can really sort of share in a less musical fashion, not through music, but about music.
And do you teach it as a quartet, and then do you do breakout sessions, or do you just stay together? How's that work?
It depends on the situation. A lot of times we go to universities like what we're going to do tonight, and we're not really sure who's going to play for us. So we get sometimes a variety of things. We get string quartets, in which case we, you know, go in there and we work with them together, or we get solo instruments. We've even had instruments that are not our own, you know, like clarinets and things. And in that case, I think generally we tend to just kind of do a one person, or like, and then if you have something else you'd like to share, we chime in. But it is sort of a group process. We kind of play it by ear depending on the situation.
Okay. Sounds like that's going to be fun. That's from 7 to 9 out in the UAS Egan Wing. So you can check that out. That's free, all part of the some of these Juno Jazz and Classics events that are indeed free, which are many. Let's see, shifting gears a little bit. You four have played all over the world. Random question, favorite venue ever? Where's been the best place to play for you? Is that a tough one?
I'd say that that's a combination of audience and place.
Oh, good answer.
Because, granted, we played at the big famous places in the world like Carnegie Hall many times. It's a different situation, for instance, when you're here in Alaska. Like that crowd the other night
was
just
great.
So warm and special. And even last night at the Alaskan Brewing Company, the Depot, on Franklin Street, for us to play Beethoven, which was sort of a pop-up concert for us because it's not something that we're carrying in our repertoire right now. So the freshness of that and how it affected that audience on a visceral level was very palpable and powerful for us as it was for them. So I think that that connection with audience trumps location. And we've played in beautiful, beautiful places around the world, in special musical institutions. But for me personally, I would say that it has to do with the experience more than the place.
Okay, that was cellist Carlos. Would either any of you like to add to that?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, I think it is the audience that makes the performance and the energy that you're feeding off of, like the people that you're playing with and the way that the audience is reacting. So definitely our time in Alaska has been really wonderful. Last year in Sitka, we had the same feeling from our audience members. Also, similarly in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, that was pretty great.
In Cali, Colombia, also
mm-hmm. was
that was probably one of the more memorable audiences because it was the first time I think a string quartet probably ever felt like a rock band.
Yeah,
it was a packed house of almost 1,000 people or something like that, and it was just screaming, chanting,
dancing.
And everything, dancing, and while playing, you know, Ravel quartet, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see, you'll be playing also, in addition to your workshop tonight, then you have a couple of days off, it looks like, or at least Wednesday, and then you play at 7 p.m. at the Holy Trinity Church
mm-hmm.
up on 4th Street. I'm pretty sure the acoustics in there are really nice, too. Have you had a chance to check it out yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, it's a beautiful space. I think you'll enjoy it. And that's Bach, Brahms, and Baklava.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Tasty.
Exactly.
I've been to your website. It's very informative. You can probably find this CD and your new project coming out there. What's in the future for you four? What's next? Anyone?
Yeah.
Jesse?
Well, this summer we do some teaching. We run a 4-week program for students, and so that's like kind of the next long-term thing on the docket. But then we do a big tour in the fall with the Sphinx Virtuosi Chamber Orchestra. We lead, we're the principal players of that ensemble, and we go on a national tour for about 6 weeks this time around. So you can catch us on the road at that point. It's between the late September and most of October we'll be traveling the country with that group.
Okay, and how would you weigh performing versus teaching? Do they feed each other? Do you need one for the other? Do you enjoy both equally?
I mean, you teach, the more you teach, you know, the more you sort of learn about your craft, and, you know, you have to sort of, in trying to explain to another person how to play your instrument, you sort of, just by that process, then in turn learn more about what it is that you're trying to do and what you're trying to say, in trying to help someone else say, you know, what they want to say. So we get a lot out of it. We certainly do a lot of teaching throughout the year, much like we'll do tonight in the master class, you know, a one-time master class, but also, like I said, the summer program that we teach for, you know, an intensive chamber music camp that's on another sort of a different level, but it's the same kind of process. And we really feel like it's crucial to performing, is to sort of maintain the teaching aspect as well.
Okay, and to see that in action, you can go to UAS tonight from 7 to 9, or you can see the concert on Thursday at 7 p.m. at Holy Trinity. Okay, can one of you set up what we're about to hear for us? Tell us a little bit about this project and tell us what we should listen for.
So I think what you're about to hear is part of our CD that just came out, and it's called the Bach Gould Project. And what it is we arranged the Bach's Goldberg Variations, which was originally for harpsichord and also played on piano, for a string quartet for the very first time. It's never been done before. And we also paired that with the only piece that a celebrated Canadian pianist ever wrote, Glenn Gould, who was also a master of the Goldberg Variations in two recordings that bookend his life. And so on this album, you'll hear those two works. And on Thursday, you'll hear the Goldberg Variations performed live. The CD is available on Amazon and iTunes currently. And we'll also have some for sale, I think, at the concert on Thursday. But you're going to hear a snippet of that now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Carla, Jesse, Paul, and Carlos. Thank you for coming to Juno.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And sharing your music with us. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. It's about 22 minutes until the top of the hour. We're currently listening to the Catalyst Quartet.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 5th of May, 2015. Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May, commemorating the Mexican victory over the French in the Battle of Puebla in 1862. The French army, well-armed, 8,000 strong, was routed by 4,000 ill-equipped Mexican soldiers. It was not a decisive battle. In the course of the war, it became a symbol of Mexican pride. It's the birthday of the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, born in Copenhagen, 1813, son of a wealthy wool merchant, and so Kierkegaard was financially independent for the rest of his life. Homebody, rarely left Copenhagen, though he enjoyed taking carriage rides out into the country and talking to people, even servants and laborers, people who were below his class. Kierkegaard, who came up with two concepts that are commonplace to us today. One is subjectivity, the idea that we each perceive the world and truth differently. And the other, the idea that faith is not possible without doubt, that one must doubt the existence of God to have faith in the existence of God. Belief without doubt is just credulity. It was Kierkegaard who wrote that life must be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. He published several books at his own expense, including Either Or and The Sickness Unto Death, and published many works under a variety of pseudonyms, including Johannes de Silentio, Anticlimacus, Hilarius Bookbinder, and Vigilius Haufniensis, which he said he hoped to disavow his own authority. And it's the birthday of the journalist whose pen name was Nellie Bly. Her real name was Elizabeth Jane Cochran. She was born in Armstrong County, Pennsylvania, 1864. She went to work for the Pittsburgh Dispatch and wrote about the way women were exploited in factories. In order to get out the story, she would sometimes pose as a sweatshop worker to report from the inside. Went off to New York, got a job with the New York World, where again she went undercover, convincing doctors and judges that she was mentally ill, so that she could get into the notorious Blackwell's Island Women's Lunatic Asylum and write an exposé of it. Here's a poem for today by Faith Sheeran, entitled Natural Disasters. During natural disasters, two enemy animals will call a truce. So during a hurricane, an owl will share a tree with a mouse. And during an earthquake, you might find a mongoose wilted and shivering beside a snake. The bear will sit down in a river and ignore the passing salmon, just as the lion will allow the zebra to walk home without comment. I love that there are exceptions. At funerals and weddings, for example, the ants, who never speak, nod politely to one another. When my mother was sick, even the prickly neighbors left flowers and cakes at our door. Natural Disasters by Faith Sheeran from Telling the Bees, published by Stephen F. Austin State University Press, and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is a welcoming congregation embracing many different beliefs and invites the community to join them on Sundays at 10 a.m. at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. More information is at juuf.org. This message brought to you by the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
Programming is made possible in part by Juno's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juno stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. It's about 14 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by Juno School District Elementary Art Specialist Nancy Lanehart. Welcome, Nancy, to the show.
Thank you.
And also Zontakini Principal Molly Yerkes. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for both coming in out of this beautiful afternoon. So, Nancy, I think we'll start with you. Tell us a little bit about what it means to be an elementary art specialist, and I understand you have an art show coming up, too.
We do. Yeah, this is the 10th year of the elementary art program in Juno, and we have an interesting model here in Juno. Our program is modeled after the Fairbanks program, which has been going on for about 30 years now, and it's a real economical way to have an art specialist to influence the classrooms and the teachers, but it's easier to maintain because you don't have an art teacher in every school. So I am the one art specialist for Juno, and I go into every classroom a couple times a year. What I do is I design art lessons, and I model those for the teachers and then create kits from those that the teachers check out and teach themselves as the years continue. And so we've built up our kit library to be over 200 art kits that are a real variety of clay projects and painting and printmaking and drawing lessons that integrate well into our other curriculum. And the teachers are really taking it on, which is the satisfying part, really makes it work. They check the kits out, and they are sharing a lot of art experiences with their kids. So our kids are really they're really growing as artists and building those skills from year to year. And so this will be our 10th art show also. We're having an art show on Saturday, the 16th of May. It'll be part of the UAS Community Day on campus. So it'll be out at the university campus. We did this last year for the first time. Before that, we've been having the art shows in the mall, at Nugget Mall, but we decided to join forces with Community Day on campus. And Juno Arts and Humanities Council is kind of helping out with putting this on, as are the Women of the Moose. They have been helping with some funding for it and some volunteer power. So it's becoming a real community effort. There'll be about 200 pieces of art in the show, 2 pieces from every elementary classroom in the district, and it's a really wonderful show. I really hope people come.
Are those juried by the teacher?
Yes, those are juried by the teacher. And if the student has a piece of art in the show, they'll be getting an invitation, so parents might keep an eye out for that. If you get an invitation saying, your child, congratulations, you know, your piece is in the show, they'll really want to come out for sure, and so their child can be part of the awards ceremony on Saturday the 16th at UAS.
Sure. Going back to the kits for a minute, what would you say are 2 of the most popular kits for your teachers?
There's a painting kit on sunflowers that you'll probably see all around the schools. Teachers really love that. Just recently designed a kit for drawing butterflies with our second grade classrooms, and I think people will see those coming home. If you have a second grader, some really beautiful butterfly drawings. I have a collection of actual butterfly specimens that the kids get to look at and think like a scientist and an artist, and I'm sure that'll be a really popular lesson.
Okay. And I understand you two have also been working on a grant. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, we'd be happy to. We were approached by the Margaret A. Cargill Foundation. And most grants, our district goes out and seeks the grants, but we were actually approached in this instance because of the strong art foundation in the Juno community, and also because of the elementary and secondary art programs here in Juno. So we were approached, and they connected with Nancy, and then...
Yeah, so it was quite a surprise. They called kind of out of the blue and asked if they could come up and visit and take a look at what we've got going. They kind of found us on the Internet, you know, and we're very... They're really into training teachers to teach through the arts, and they liked this model of providing the kits and going in and modeling for the teachers in the classroom and that kind of support. So, yeah, they came up, and we didn't know to take it very seriously, but they contacted us again, and so it's an invitation grant, and we're really excited about it. Molly's part of the leadership team. We did some kind of planning on what we might do, and do you want to tell them more about what we...
Nancy pulled the leadership team together that included Ted Wilson and Lori Hoover, myself, and Nancy. And we started really by exploring what art integration options there were out there. And we originally applied for a planning grant, and we received that. And we were able to do a lot of research, including going back to some famous art schools back east. And then... And that really kind of shaped our thought processes and helped narrow our focus a little bit on what direction we wanted to go in applying for the grant.
Okay. And we were able to pull together meetings with teachers, too.
That was really one unique aspect of this grant is they really wanted to focus on what do teachers and community in your community want. Not we're going to come in with a solution and tell you what that is, but really it's a grassroots effort. So we did pull together numerous meetings, including visiting every one of our elementary and secondary schools, and we got feedback from teachers on what they felt strong in, what they felt weak in as far as arts integration, and how they felt we could best approach professional development for them.
Okay. Molly, from a perspectives point of view, what would you say that art education does for young people?
You know, it does so many things, it's hard to even know where to start. Within our own community, we have met with the Juno Economic Development Council, and they've talked about how the arts have really made our city more economically viable because of the rich art community that we have here. So I think it helps not just students' interest in learning, but also our entire community.
Yeah, absolutely. Nancy, how about you? What do you see it doing for kids?
I think it's just so essential. You know, if you are out in the elementary schools in particular, you know, that's been my area, but also the middle schools and high schools. If students are just engaged on a kind of paper pencil level, it's really different when you come into a classroom where they're doing some kind of visual art or some kind of dramatic experience where they're learning their curriculum through another mode and a creative mode. It really reaches students that otherwise don't really connect with the curriculum. It helps some students shine who don't otherwise shine. It's a way for accelerated students to really go beyond because it's kind of limitless. It's really valuable, like Molly said. It's really those are really valuable skills to learn for the world today. That kind of visual communication is really valued by employers now. And so art skills are increasingly more valued.
Okay. In the meantime, as all of these artists and this art comes to fruition and benefits our community, you can go see the pieces at the Elementary Art Show that will take place out at the UASD on campus. Is it Saturday the 16th?
Saturday the 16th from 11 to 4.
Okay.
And there's other really fun things happening
right?
at that community day.
It's a big day. It's really gaining popularity. A lot of people seem to really enjoy it.
Hope for good weather again this year.
Absolutely. Nancy Lanehart and Molly Yerkes, thank you both for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. A little summertime right there, Mr. Charlie Parker. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 5th, 2015. It's about 5 minutes till the top of the hour, and I've been joined by telephone by the one, the only, Miss Colette Costa.
Hello, Mr. Burton. How are you?
I'm well. I hope you're on a deck somewhere enjoying the sun.
Well, let's just say I can see it from here, a lot like Russia.
Well, tell us we have like 3 minutes. Give us Gold Town Nick 101.
101 breakdown. Look, you guys, two quick things. We have the last of our on-screen live theater productions that we're showing tonight and tomorrow of Mice and Men, starring James Franco and Chris O'Dowd, Tony nominated. There are these awesome productions, they're recorded live. This one was on Broadway last year, and then they make them available to theaters like ours. Tonight and tomorrow, 6:30 p.m., just show up. Then we have part of the Juno Chapman Classics. We're doing a not-so-silent film. This will be Monday, the 11th. It's going to be with WinSync, which is part of Jazz and Classics. They're going to be doing a short animated Cinderella, which is 1922. And then Rumblefish, which is our local old-time string band, will be playing to the Thomas Edison film, The Great Train Robbery. That's Monday, the 11th. Tickets are at Rainy Retreat Books and online at our website. And they're going to go fast, so get them now.
That sounds like a lot of fun. How did you get connected with Juno Jazz and Classics?
Well, I've been working with Linda Rosenthal for 3 or 4 years now. We've done this, I think, 3 or 4 years in a row. And the first few times we just did sort of adjunct movies that went in with whatever artists were being played. But we started doing these silents about we did at least three of them. We did the Richard Dowling Ragtime Piano last year or the year before. And it just seems like every year we get one of the bands that's really interested in doing it. And she hooked me up with the band, and then I kind of walked them through the process.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. If folks want more information, Colette, where should they go?
How about goldtownnick.com?
All right, Colette Costa, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We'll see you at the theater.
All right, have a great afternoon. Enjoy the sunshine, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, we'll learn about the Juno Jumpers Show and the local letter carriers food drive, Stamp Out Hunger. Lori Sicca will be here to highlight litter-free Juno, and we'll get our appetites ready for the Reach fundraising spaghetti dinner. And we'll talk with Victor Asuncion, one of the headline performers at this year's Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. As for the weather tonight, mostly clear, lows 34 to 38. Tomorrow, Wednesday, partly cloudy, highs around 57. Thursday, partly cloudy in the morning, mostly cloudy in the afternoon, highs around 57. And going into Friday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 57. And into the weekend, mostly cloudy, chance of rain.